welcome back to Life Beat. I'm your host, Anna Visser, and I'm here today with Chris.
The coronavirus negative Chris, but still sick at home Chris.
Yes. We've lost a couple, not lost. That sounds bad.
Okay. Whoa, you know. Wow.
We've had a couple people sick in the office. That's a better way to put it. But nonetheless, we continue on. So today we're talking about the Texas Heartbeat Act and how it's still going strong, even though there's been a couple attempts to get rid of it.
Yeah, it's surprising to me.
Did you say it's surprising?
Yeah, I mean, I think in all the years I've been following pro-life news, I can't ever remember there being a case where a pro-life law that's like new was allowed to just go into effect without having to like, you know, without being blocked and the Supreme Court having to give it an okay. So I just think it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that it's made it this far. And that when it did get blocked a couple days ago, it took 2 days to get it unblocked. Like, that's crazy. I feel like that's never happened before.
No, I can't ever remember it happening that way. Usually it would work the other way. If a lower court said this is fine, then the abortion industry will find someone on the circuit court judge, or they always seem to get lucky with, you know, because the circuit court is a bunch of judges and they pull a pool of out of the pool, only three judges. They always seem to get the luck and always they're always blocked. Like, no pro-life law like it's new ever gets like enforced. So just the fact that the whole people can sue the abortionist thing, you know, it's like it's totally hacked the legal system in our favor, because even though it's not really a hack, like, it should be perfectly legal to like ban abortion, but there you go.
So to give a little background on what we're talking about right now, for people that don't know, there was a federal judge, I think his name was Judge Pittman or Judge Robert Pittman, and he put an injunction on the Texas Heartbeat Act, and the Fifth Circuit Court blocked the injunction 2 days after it was put into place. So for 2 days, the Texas law was not in place. And it's funny because I read an article where it said all the Texas abortion facilities were kind of split, where half of them did as many as abortions as they possibly could, while the other half actually didn't schedule any abortions for those 2 days. And they referred women to other birth controls, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting to see that Texas was actually upholding the law, and very encouraging, because I know that could be an issue where they're just like choose to, you know, find a loophole in it, or, you know, they seem to break every other law of health code and anything else. Yeah. So I guess I'm just grateful that they're actually following the Heartbeat Act.
Yeah, as you know, as you pointed out in that Vice News article, like about the lady who went to Oklahoma, that they're actually doing it. I think kind of what I've gleaned is that, you know, Planned Parenthood, because they're such a high profile national organization and they're taking a $500 million in your money through tax dollars every year, they tend to be like way more risk averse than like your, you know, abortionists who run like their abortion facility as like an LLC or whatever, who are just on their own. And so sometimes that kind of works against Planned Parenthood, the fact that they are so big. I mean, they're like the big box store of the abortion industry.
Yeah, that's very true. They probably have more people watching them and more regulations, and it would be easy for someone to find out if they were still performing abortions after 6 weeks.
Right.
but still encouraging. I know that it sets the tone for future pro-life laws and for hopefully when Roe versus Wade gets overturned, it sets the tone for that, you know, people need to take these laws seriously and they need to enforce them whether they believe in abortion or not. And so I think this does set the tone that people will listen and not just go against it because they don't believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, if obviously you're still going to have people who like travel to other states or whatever for abortions, but a lot of women are not going to do that. And that means that there's going to be a lot of babies saved. Even, you know, after Roe versus Wade, if we have this patchwork where, you know, half the states ban abortion and half the states don't, or however that might end up.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to say. It's hard to say how many. I know there are quite a few states that do have trigger laws or pre-existing laws, but it's hard to say what's going to happen with those. I'm excited to see, though.
It will be interesting, and I think people will. I think it'll be good in the sense that you know, if the Supreme Court overturns Roe and Dobbs, that you know, instead of like these weird national debates where everyone's talking about Texas, like. Everyone's going to be talking about their own state and mm-hmm. elected officials and their own voters, you know? So it's not like, what are five people on the Supreme Court going to do? It's, you know, what is my state representative going to do? I mean, the other side talks about democracy till they're blue in the face. Well, you know, that's democracy.
Yeah. You know, I think that's interesting because maybe other people thought about this more than I did, but I guess I didn't realize this until COVID happened, that it does matter who your governor is. It does matter who your representatives are of your state, and they make a huge impact in what happens in your state. And so I think people, you know, expect the president, it all to be on him, and it is a big deal who the president is, obviously, but it also is a big deal who your governor is, who your representatives are, who your attorney general is. And so I think that, you know, maybe if Roe versus Wade does get overturned, this will be another reminder, similar to COVID, that those things are important and you need to think about them and not just be like, oh, I'm just going to vote for the president and like that's going to be the me, you know, putting in my effort to have a voice, you know.
Right, you know, and I mean that's our theory. Even if you look at it the other way from the ground up, you know, today's county commissioner and sheriff is tomorrow's state representative, is next mm-hmm. Congress member. So yeah, elections have consequences.
They do. We have a pin that says that.
Have I said that before? I can't. Is Right to Life in Michigan ever? So I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the most common comment. Like people just walk around the office. They don't say hi. They're just like, elections have consequences.
They do. It's kind of funny, but it's a nice reminder.
Yeah.
So that's going to bring us into another one of our Twitter segments where, you know, we don't exactly have a name for this yet, but we're working on it. If you have suggestions, please let me know because we don't know what to call it. But it's basically another segment of crazy things that people say on Twitter that make no sense.
Yeah, so if you have a name suggestion, you can call Anna Visser at 61. No, I'm just kidding. email us at info@rtl.org.
Yes. Actually, if you really do have a suggestion, we're looking for one. And we want it to be, like, catchy, obviously. So if you do, let me know.
So, yeah, NARAL, pro-choice Massachusetts. So kind of like the national abortion rights action league, kind of one of their state affiliates, decided to weigh in on the Texas case in a very interesting way for hashtag Indigenous Peoples Day. They said abortion bans like SB8, that's Texas heartbeat law, disproportionately impact communities of color, including Indigenous communities. As recently as 2020, ICE forcibly sterilized immigrant Indigenous women against their will. So I think there's two levels to this. The first level, well, when you're saying that, you know, abortion bans disproportionately impact communities of color, I think what you're really saying is a lot of minority women are the ones having abortions. And there's a whole level of analysis you can do that. But from the pro-life movement standpoint, that means that abortion bans disproportionately save minority lives. And I ask, what is the problem with that? Is it bad to have more
people, minorities
of color and indigenous peoples? I mean, this is not our issue, but isn't the whole, like, I don't like Columbus Day because, you know, a lot of Native or Indigenous peoples, as they would say, suffered and died. Well, then isn't having more Indigenous people in America a good thing? Not according to NARAL Pro-Choice Massachusetts. They want fewer community people in communities of color and fewer Indigenous people.
You know, I never quite understood.
Quality.
I never quite understood that argument of you can't ban abortion because it would impact minority groups too much and rob them of reproductive health rights or whatever they say.
Yeah, because they are like, you know, the fact that there have been more abortions on Black women since 1973 than deaths of every cause combined in the Black community in that time, you know, they're very embarrassed to talk about it and admit it. But I think, I guess if you ignore the unborn child as, you know, as a non-existent entity, and your normal mode of politics is talking about, you know, issues that way, then I guess that's just your de facto sort of argument to try to get, you know, because the way Planned Parenthood and, you know, NARAL is basically Planned Parenthood's little sister. You know, the way they do things now is they almost spend as much time talking about issues other than abortion than abortions, because they know abortion is not really that popular and they have to string together all these other constituencies, you know, into their side by making all these sorts of arguments. You know, that change happened, I don't know, like 10 years ago when, and people don't say intersectionality much anymore, but that whole idea that, you know, if you're with us on any of these other issues, you have to be with us on abortion as well, or you're against all these other issues, you know?
You know, that's interesting because, last weekend at the Protect Life Michigan conference, they had a speaker. I honestly don't know how to say her last name. Hold on. Let me try to pronounce it. She's the founder of the Progressive Anti-Abortion Uprising, or whatever that's called. Her name's Teresa. I don't want to say her last name. But she was actually talking about that concept of the pro-abortion movement is so popular and nobody really questions it that much, that are associated with being more liberal versus conservative, because they do a really good job of getting allies within Black Lives Matter and animal rights. And I can't even think of, you know, like things like that. They have all these allies that all kind of work together. And so if you are within the Black Lives Matter movement, you're more inclined to be pro-abortion, because I'm not quite sure why, but they all like mix together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if your major concern is, you know, more minority representation in government and more influence and power through voting, then the number one thing you shouldn't do is kill your future voters.
Correct.
Yeah.
But that goes to show that, you know, maybe the pro-life movement should focus on reaching those communities, reaching the people that tend to gravitate towards more liberal views.
We do. And then you run into the whole kind of, to square the circle. That's not what I'm thinking about. My brain's not working. But run back into the, well, then if they don't vote for pro-abortion politicians, who are they voting for? And so you run back into the whole, you know, Republicans are almost all, Democrats are almost all pro-abortion thing now. So, you know, it was really weird, but it was like a golden age for pro-lifers in the, you know, 1980s and 1990s, when you could still find, you know, you could still work within both parties and sides of the aisle. Obviously, we want both sides of the aisle to be 100% pro-life. So then everything would be really easy.
Yeah, it's too bad that it has to be so affiliated with a political party, even though it has nothing to do with politics.
Right.
What was that?
I was just going to, no, you go ahead.
I saw this article the other day. I think it must have been from Live Action or Life News, but it was a representative, forget which state, but she was talking about her abortion and how she was in the Black community. And she was talking about how when she went to Planned Parenthood, they were actually super racist to her. And she felt very alone, very depressed after she had her abortion. But in the end, she's like, I want to tell my story, but I want people to like make a narrative out of it that I'm not trying to say, even though everything she said pointed towards the fact that everything we've been saying, Planned Parenthood is racist, and the women do have a lot of regret, and they do have a lot of mental health issues after they have an abortion.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was interesting that she basically shared her story, but
Well, speaking of racism and Planned Parenthood, so the other half of that NARAL Massachusetts tweet.
Oh, yes.
As recently as 2020, ICE forcibly sterilized immigrant indigenous women against their will. So talking about a case where the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Organization, you know, have all these, you know, women at the border in these facilities, and they're pregnant and they're not pregnant, excuse me. And they're going to this like one creepy doctor who is sterilizing them. And they got really mad about that. And they went around, you know, trying to shame pro-life people, which, first of all, like, pro-life people do not want to sterilize anybody. I mean, you could probably find some pro-lifers who would object to sterilization at all. Like, no, like, A, this is a creepy doctor acting on his own. It's not the Trump administration's policy, which was the thing. Oh, look, Donald Trump is doing this. No, it was some creepy doctor down there. And B, every pro-life person would want to punish you. And then C, the big point here, what organization, Anna, has been engaged in forcibly sterilizing women overseas? Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure it's Planned Parenthood.
So if you want to criticize anybody about forcible sterilization, well, why don't you start with the organization whose founder thought that, you know, poor women were, you know, hurting the genetic stock of our race and need to stop having children. And this is kind of interesting. Like, I don't know that, you know, even Margaret Sanger talked a good game, but I don't think she ever really backed like forcibly sterilizing women. She's like, you know, do everything possible to sterilize poor women, but don't, I don't know if she ever real explicitly said we have to forcibly sterilize women. However, her organization, you know, didn't really make much of a distinction. And, you know, like I said, they've been, and they're still involved in probably China today. I don't know how, I know through, we've been involved as taxpayers through United Nations Population Fund. I'm not sure how much, you know, International Planned Parenthood Federation partners with them, but like, you guys are the ones that are okay with forcible sterilization and who think, like, when you talk to a lot of these abortion supporters about poor women having babies, they're like, oh, well, they can't take care of them. They're not capable. And these children have miserable lives anyway. Like, this is projection. That's what this is. Don't get me started. I'm already started.
Oh, you can get started. It's all right. Go ahead.
I could rant for an hour. I think, I don't know if we've done a feature like back in the day when it was just me on the podcast, if I did a feature about like some of the creepy stuff Planned Parenthood did in Puerto Rico and other places, you know, testing things on women without their consent. They have such a rich history of, you know, hurting immigrant and indigenous women against their will. They've never been held to account to, but the vast majority of Americans are not aware of that. I bet even most of their supporters and people who work there would be horrified to learn. But, you know, that sort of thing gets swept under the rug.
I mean, it's just like how they took off all the information about Margaret Sanger on their website and try to just completely erase it from the public knowledge and say they have nothing to do with her.
And yeah, the same people giving awards to Hillary Clinton in her name are no, we don't know this Margaret Sanger person.
Who is she?
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
well, you know, next week is going to be a Lifebeat feature, and it sounds like you have a lot to say about this, Chris.
I don't know. I could still be sick, Anna. You never know.
Huh. We'll see. We also are celebrating Down Syndrome Awareness Month to move on from Chris trying to get all riled up about Planned Parenthood. We're going to move on from that.
Oh, I can still get riled up in this segment, but let's go. Let's continue. Let's start positive.
So we are celebrating Down Syndrome Awareness Month. Every October, I think for the last 50 years, has been Down Syndrome Awareness Month. And it's kind of just a time to bring awareness to the accomplishments, also the struggles, and the abilities that people with Down syndrome do have. You know, they're able to get jobs and go to school and drive a car and get married. They're able to do anything really that they put their mind to. And I think this month is just a great reminder of those things. And that, you know, I think it was 60%, 60 to 90% of babies who are diagnosed in the womb with Down syndrome in the U.S. are aborted. That is a large number. That is over half. That's almost 100%, 60 yeah. to 90. And I know there are countries that are already at 100% due to genetic testing. And the U.S. is slowly but surely heading in that direction. And so I think this month is just a nice reminder of the humanity of people with Down syndrome and disabilities in general. So we are celebrating that this month.
And we should, you know, and I think in our society, we kind of have this bias towards you know, your life or someone else's life only has value if they're a productive member of society. In other words, someone else only matters if it's, you know, if it's doing something for me down the road or in some way. But like, life is obviously, you know, life is important. It doesn't matter whether you are the most productive human being on the planet or the least productive, you know, your life matters. And, you know, I think, you know, one great thing the pro-life movement has done is really focus on people with Down syndrome. And, you know, even if their life doesn't, their life doesn't have value because they can get jobs or because they can graduate from high school or because they can show up at a congressional hearing and provide testimony. But, you know, I think it's winning people over. We saw in a Gallup poll a couple of years ago that a majority of Americans think that abortions, just because the child has Down syndrome, should be banned, period. Just over 50%. And I found that to be amazing. And so I think it's great. The pro-life movement, we've been, you know, talking about this, you know, when you explain to someone the value of another human being, they tend to agree that they shouldn't be killed. And so we have a lot of great stories on our website, rtl.org, of, like you mentioned, you know, with this genetic testing, a lot of parents, you know, pressured to get rid of.
They're scared. The doctors.
Yeah. And it is scary. You know, I mean, I've had, you know, we've been through 5 pregnancies, 4 births, 1 miscarriage. At no point have we ever had a diagnosis of any problem in the womb, but you know, I know people that everyone knows someone that has, and it is scary because you don't know what's going to happen and you're worried for your kid. You know, you're worried, you know, what's going to happen with my kid when I'm, you know, elderly or when I pass away. Those are all legitimate concerns, but, you know, that fear of the moment, the other side takes advantage of it. And so many doctors, unfortunately, just tell these women before they even tell them the condition, you know, abort, 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 abort.
Yeah. I think one thing that the pro-life movement has done a really good job of is establish that people with disabilities, with Down syndrome, they have value, even if, you know, they don't add value in some sort of way to society. Because, and I think that argument got set aside a while ago, because you could say, well, what about like a newborn baby? They don't necessarily contribute anything to society or add value, but we still thankfully value newborn infant babies. But I think we're moving towards the argument of, especially with like My Body, My Choice going on, that's, people are screaming that right now. I think with that side going on right now, people are more focused on, you know, I don't want the burden of raising a baby with a disability. I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't want to see them suffer. I don't want to, you know, have this be a part of my life forever. I don't want to take care of them forever. So I think it's less of, they don't add any value to my life, more of like, maybe a selfish, like, I don't want the burden because it's my body and it's my choice and it's my life and I have control of what my future is going to look like.
Yeah, to quote The Princess Bride, a great movie, you know, life, you know, we're all going to have pain and suffering in life, but that's not our only story. And just the idea that, you know, we can create a society like, say, you know, Denmark, one of those countries where that rate is practically 100%, where, you know, your life only has value if you're, you know, if you're a cog in the machine of the state, or we can build a society where, you know, everyone's life has value, whether they're suffering or whether they're not suffering. You know, and put it this way, there's value in caring for someone who's not well. You know, there's value in being a parent, and you do get something if your only perspective is, what do I get out of it? You do get a lot out of it. When you think about it, but
yeah, you can see all the stories on our website. Every single one of them, the family just talks about how much of a blessing the child with the disability is to their family. Like they never like, oh, I regret bringing this child into the world. they always talk about how they are so blessed and the child brings so much joy to their family. And so I think that's just a nice reminder as we continue to celebrate Down Syndrome Awareness Month. And like Chris said, you can find those on our website under real life stories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that about wraps it up for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, Chris is going to do a feature on the abortion industry and population control, specifically forced sterilization, I think. So stay tuned. You're the boss. For that. What was that?
You're the boss.
I am the boss. Stay tuned for that. It will be next Friday as usual, probably sometime in the afternoon. But thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to send me your suggestions for Twitter names. And I hope you all have a great weekend.